Hi, everyone. I have an interview coming up in a minute with Chris Knowles from the Secret Sun blog. Chris is somebody I really enjoy. I've had him on the show before, but I know from that previous episode that not everyone appreciates the cut of Chris's jib, and that's okay. I just hope in this interview I can point out the points of disagreement I have with Chris, but the overwhelming point of agreement I have in terms of the crazy connections he's drawing between pop culture and so many of the occulted realities that seem to pop up everywhere. I think you'll get the gist of what I'm saying in this interview with Chris. Today we welcome the very excellent host of the Secret Sun blog and the author of such books as Our Gods Wear Spandex, the Secret History of Rock and Roll, and The Complete X-Files. If you're watching this video, you can see all those up on your screen. Chris Knowles is here. Chris, welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me.
Great to be back. Really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am too. So, you know, one of the things I have up on the screen is the little the Secret Sun logo. I was at the website the other day, and I'm constantly amazed. I get so excited reading these blog posts. I'm like, oh, man, this is the kind of stuff I really want to talk about. But I got to say, I want to make sure this work continues. You're such a humble guy. Go to the website. You're pretty low-key on the subscription. You don't do the Patreon thing. I mean, I felt guilty. I was like, man, I got to support this work. How are we going to do it? So you're pretty low-key on all that stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess it's my punk rock roots, you know? It's, you know, my punk rock hippie kind of mentality, I guess. It doesn't serve me well, but, you know, as it stands at the moment, I really haven't had the time to get involved with all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, Patreon, it's like a whole level, you know, of work added onto the work you're already doing, because you have to, you know, always work with the premiums and the special content and everything like that. And it's like literally all I can do just to get the stuff on the blog up. So
I hear you. I hear you. I think it can get in the way. I mean, one of the things I think is so great, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you back on, is that your work is so highly influential that I think for a lot of folks, they're familiar with the ideas, they're familiar with the themes that you're bringing up, but they're not necessarily connecting it directly with you. And I think that's really cool on one level and kind of this punk rock underground thing. But I also want to kind of bring it out a little bit and make explicit in this interview what's going on and not just have you and I engage in a fun round of inside baseball, which we could do. So I think that's one of the goals of what I want to try and do in this interview today. So where I thought we might start, Chris, is some real quick hitter definitions. So this is stuff that you and I would talk about and just kind of talk past, but maybe they need to be kind of fleshed out just a little bit, very quickly. I mean, sync. We're going to talk about syncs all over the place. Real quickly, what's a sync?
Well, a sync is short for synchronicity, and a synchronicity is a highly meaningful coincidence. I tend to believe that synchronicity is rather common. It's just sort of the way the world works. It's sort of the world just sort of talking to you and telling you what's going on, updating you. It's sort of like updating your software, literally updating your software. For me, a sync is a supercharged, symbolically supercharged, meaningful coincidence. So in other words, you can have significant and synchronistic events like literally all day long if you begin to pay attention to them. If you look for them, you're going to find them, because it's, like I said, it's the way the world operates. It's the way consciousness operates. But then, there are like alerts. It's sort of like, you know, when you get these like amber alerts or silver alerts on your phone, it's like I sort of reserve sync, you know, the sort of minor syncs, what I call guppies, And then there are major syncs where it's like, this is the alert. This is, you know, the alert broadcast system sending you a message that you really need to pay attention to.
You know, it's funny that you would throw Amber Alert in there, because we're going to have to pull that out and deal with that separately in terms of the manufactured alerts and the manufactured entrainment that we get. But, you know, the thing I wanted to draw out on the sync is that I think a lot of people get the sync at the level that you were speaking about it right then, in terms of, wow, the universe is sending me a message, 1111, and I'm not putting that down because I think that's real. But what you've done in a rather unique way is connect this idea to culture, and that, you know, culture is both sending us these messages and then may have even been, I don't want to say co-opted, but engineered to create some messages that we might want to hear. But with that, before we go too long, because we'll spend, you know, 10 minutes talking about that, let's go down to another definition. Synchromistic. So what are we saying when we say synchromistic beyond the sync?
Well, synchromysticism is a praxis. There's a bit of controversy over who actually created the term. I know that Goro Adachi was doing this work publicly very early on. I had been doing it privately for at least 20 years now. But synchromysticism is a praxis in which you study, you're basically psychoanalyzing culture. You're approaching culture as a Jungian analyst. So you're looking at this, particularly pop culture. Pop culture is the collective dream. It's the collective consciousness dreaming. So you analyze that. What is this culture saying? You know, what symbols is it using? Is it using these symbols intentionally? Is it using them unintentionally? I mean, what can we divine from this bombardment, this constant bombardment that we're receiving, even when we sleep? You know, how do we process this? How do we make sense of this? How is this being manipulated? You know, I look through the manipulation of culture and the manipulation of symbolism through the lens of sympathetic magic. Now, I know a lot of people sort of see it in a sense of, you know, everything's a psyop and everything is just mind control. You know, and I'm not arguing that certainly is a, you know, very much a part of all this, but I see it more as a function of sympathetic magic. And sympathetic magic is when you try to appropriate, you know, the symbols and the themes of the power that you're trying to draw into yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, you know,
let's cut that off right there. Hold that thought, because let's marry that with something that you just mentioned kind of in passing, but I think is completely intertwined with your work in a way that we have to break it out for people to really understand, because you're kind of switching back and forth a lot of times fluidly, as you should, because they are intertwined, but let's break it apart. I mean, there's this personal synchronicity that we experience. There's this cultural synchronicity that we experience. We are reflective of and reflecting to our culture. And then there's this third leg of, there's this conspiratorial aspect that is going on. There is mind control. We're just talking about, you know, geoengineering. That stuff is real, as is the effort to misinform and give us the head fake that, no, that isn't really going on. Why would you think that kind of thing? So I'm talking for a long time. Give us a brief rundown of what conspiracy means to you and what role it plays in your work.
Well, and the role it plays in my work, again, is what I see primarily as a function of sympathetic magic. Now, this process is a process in which symbolism and memes and icons are manipulated intentionally in order to achieve a result. And I think, you know, a phrase that Gordon and I use a lot, Gordon White of of Rune Soup use a lot is getting their attention. So in other words, I think where a lot of people tend to look at this symbolism that they see in media as purely a function of conspiracy, that it's all, you know, that we're all being sort of entrained in a sort of MK Ultra, Naomi, you know, Chatter, Bluebird, whatever program you choose, that it's all a function of some sort of programming. And I think in there is a tremendous amount of entrainment going on, and that's something that I've been trying very hard to detail, because I think that we're seeing what I call emerging archetypal dominance, and that is that new symbols are being fed. People are still looking for like these sort of 15th century Rosicrucian, Masonic, Templar, I mean, all this sort of symbolism being fed into the culture. And I think what that material was and what its function was and why we saw so much of it in rap and music video and in high fashion is that that was part of the entrainment process. And it's basically getting people to respond to symbolism in a way that they hadn't consciously. So it's making what had been subconscious and unconscious conscious, because I think that there is an effort to change mass consciousness in a way that I don't believe this world has ever seen. And I think that, I don't think this is speculation or conspiracy theory per se. I mean, you know, there are papers published on this through academic journals and you know, psychology and science journals. And you know, we're really seeing, because of this unprecedented extent of data that we're forced to process every minute of our lives, that consciousness is changing. And you can sort of see this in I don't know what necessarily say benign terms, but it's like, you know, when we hear a lot about things like the Mandela effect and alternate reality and reality is getting weird and reality is changing, you know, I think one of the functions of that is that we, you know, you and I grew up certainly with, you know, a limited number of television stations, a limited number of radio channels, that the data stream that we were subjected to was very limited and it was very tightly controlled and managed to the point of like being clenched. You know what I mean? It was so hyper managed and so hyper focused that it was airless. And the internet and all these forms of communication that have been opened up to us through electronics are changing our reality paradigms, because we simply have more data to sift through. And data change, you know, you're a programmer. I mean, the more data you put into a program, the more data you put into a computer, it changes the way the computer functions. And I think that that's...
But hold on, Chris. Hold on. Because I want to put a big maybe on all that stuff, both as a way of helping people understand your work and as a way of winning some people over to the ideas that you just stated, is kind of put a pause on it and say, okay, first of all, let's agree to disagree. You know, it's a funny saying. I just had an interview with the skeptic Michael Shermer, and I jumped on him because he did this. He totally lied about something. He totally misrepresented in Scientific American a researcher, this NDE researcher. And he just said something that the guy said something that he didn't say. And then he said, well, I saw it one way, he saw it another way. We agreed to disagree. I said, no, that's not agreeing to disagree. That's just distorting the truth. But one of the things, I guess, to make this point, our group of alternative media, our group that of the alt, you know, that just agrees with what you're saying, like you and me and Gordon and a bunch of other folks, or, you know, Greg Carlwood or Miguel Connor or, you know, the Grimerica guys or guys that generally talk with each other. We just take all this stuff and we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think we're at a point where we need to take that next level of saying, wait a minute, you know, what about the other side of that? And be willing to kind of take that to the next level of saying, you know what, as a community, we're ready to kind of examine it with the same critical work that culture does and everyone else does with our work. A long way of getting to this point. And that is, what I want to do is take what you just said and put it under the microscope vis-a-vis some of your blog posts. Because I came across and I just pulled up three, I think we might get to if we have time, three of your recent blog posts. And I want to look at them through this lens of bracketed reality. You mentioned Gordon White. I was just listening to an excellent interview he did with paraanthropologist Jack Hunter, who is going to be on this show soon. And they were talking about bracketed ontologies in anthropology. And I thought, and then I was getting ready for this interview, and I thought, wait a minute. That's exactly what Chris is doing. What Chris is kind of exposing here is this bracketed realities that we live in. And I think people will get a better idea for that if we jump right in. And I'm going to tee up one of your posts here in a second. And then I want you to talk us through what you said about it. So, okay, Chris, tell us a little bit about the Met Gala.
Hi, everybody. Let me jump in with a little piece here, because going back through and editing, I realized this wasn't quite teed up in a way that you could understand it. The Met Gala, if you don't know, is this huge fashion show that was held in New York. And the big controversy, if you could see it on the screen, if you can't, I apologize, was that the church partnered with fashion to do all this, what a lot of Catholics thought was a misappropriation of all these Catholic symbols. So, you know, they took the hat that the Pope wears, and they kind of turned that into something, and they got, you know, demons and angels and all this crazy stuff that really stirred up a lot of Catholics, as you can imagine. I mean, if you're understanding, I'm not a Christian, but if I was brought up in that tradition, this stuff is sacred. This is Jesus. This is holy. This is God. This is not something to be played with, toyed with, made fun of, which they are in some ways, or even just trivialized in any way. Imagine people who devote their whole life to this faith and to the sacredness of the office of the Pope and the trappings of all the religion. And then here they are in a fashion show. It really is a mismatch. You don't have to take my word for it. You can just go Google it, and you'll see all the Catholics that were just completely outraged. And then, of course, there's the other side that said, oh, isn't this wonderful? But that's teeing up at least the point that we're discussing.
What I see happening is that I, you know, particularly with these, what I call these emerging archetypal dominance, is that I see that culture, consciously or not, is being entrained. Now, by entrainment, I mean that it's a conditioning process. It's a process in which we're being led through symbolic narratives, you know, through a kind of ubiquity, through repetition, through these symbols being attached to meaningful events, to news events, to publicity, you know, events such as this.
But again, Chris, can I jump in there? Because I want to... You're starting in the middle. What I want people to get, whether they agree with you or not, is how this thing played on Good Morning America. So yeah. Let's face it, this is how 80% of people are getting it, whether they're agreeing with it 100% or not. Let me play Good Morning America, and then I'll skip around the video and then respond to that. Okay, here we go.
Some call it the Super Bowl of fashion, as you know, celebrities, fashion designers, more, all colliding on that red carpet last night at the Metropolitan Museum. And Lara, you looked absolutely gorgeous on the red carpet.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Look at my girl. Look.
Tickets to the gala go for an estimated $30,000 each, but that's only if you make the cut. And the fashion did not disappoint. On fashion's
biggest
night,
I'm gonna skip through
the stars taking to the Metropolitan
but I want
Museum
to capture
stairs,
various pieces of it, and then we can edit it out. I can edit it out
you know, as we go on.
See, I've gone through all this material so many times.
I know. I'm playing it into our presentation so that people can see this and hear it, which is what I think is vital, right? Because you're in it, and they're not. So, here's A-Rod and J-Lo.
It did not look like this.
See, this is normal. This is A-Rod. What are you talking about, Chris? In a minute, we'll see George Clooney. What are you talking about? Oh, no, better yet, there's NFL stars. There's George Clooney. What are you talking about? This is just charity work. And it's gala, it's fashion, it's fun. Chris, come on. Even the stars couldn't help being starstruck. Now I'll stop it right there because I've teed it up. What are you talking about?
What am I talking about? Or
I'm being facetious because is a bracketed reality. I see one reality being presented that is pop culture, fashion, art, charity, NFL, Hollywood celebrity. Chris, that's what it is. And I see another reality that this caused an uproar among a lot of Catholics. And they were saying, oh my God, this is so blasphemous. How can they do it? And then the secular atheist community was like, yeah, that's how we can do it because you're all full of crap and we know what the truth is. It's atheism. And then there's also the political angle of what's the Pope playing with this and what are the politics of it? And there's a social justice warrior of it, aren't we free? And then here's another bracketed reality that only you are getting into, or you're looking deeper and you're saying, wait, what is the play here between what is supposed to be a spiritual group, the Catholics, and the overtly satanic part of it? What's the trickster element of it? What's the magic element of it? You said sympathetic magic. And there's even, I would suggest, a fourth bracketed reality, and then I'll let you go on it. But, you know, there's the entrainment. You know, who's behind this in terms of entrainment, in terms of mind control, conspiracy, culture shaping? So, you know, here's what's being presented to us, and I'll go back to your post here. Here's what's presented is it's the Met Gala, no big deal. What the beauty of your work is that you're saying, hey, folks, look at this from all these bracketed realities and look at them all at the same time. And what's the message that comes through?
Well, it's interesting because I hadn't seen the news report on this particular event. And it's really kind of shocking to me. I guess I should watch more television. The way that's presented was rather sinister in a way. It's, you know, because it starts off with like, this is what the good people are doing. This is what the people who can, you know, afford $30,000 just for a ticket to a night out. You know, I'm sure they spent several thousand dollars on top of that. I mean, you know, what most of the people watching make in a year, these people were spending in a night. So there is this elitism that transcends elitism. What we're seeing here is that these people are our new gods, that these people are demigods, these people are celebrities. These people are role models. These are the people that we need to aspire to, that we need to listen to. These are the people that we need to follow. And it's interesting, too, because I heard a little clip of Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus, Your Own Personal Jesus, which I thought was a rather strange song to play in that context, because that's a rather caustic lyric. But, you know, the Catholic Church was deeply involved in this. There were Catholic clergy in the hall that night. I think what they're doing here is, I think all of the above, all the brackets that you presented are correct. And I think that's maybe the difference between my work and a lot of other people's work. Because these things all function on all these separate levels. And this is what I talk about when we're trying to do a kind of psychoanalysis of culture. But what we're also seeing here, to me, is actually a little more insidious than what I had gathered from, you know, the material that I had seen. I hadn't seen it presented and packaged quite in that way. And it's interesting that Good Morning America has those Masonic colors. You know, it has Masonic, you know, the specific Masonic blue and the specific Masonic gold is in their logo, which is, you know, sort of an interesting combination to follow on there. But really, you know, what we're seeing here is it almost reminds me, you know, I grew up rather religious. You know, I had a conservative religious upbringing, you know, not fundamentalist, but conservative. And this is sort of almost pre-religious right in some ways. And, you know, we would get a lot of material, these bulks of tracks that were all sort of, you know, Jack Chick, Tex Mars, I mean, that kind of material. And this to me looks like something from one of the, you know, Jack Chick's worst fever dream. I mean, Jack Chick was a fundamentalist cartoonist who put these tracks out that, you know, sort of have great kitsch value. And, you know, he was a real Catholic basher. And, you know, this looks to me like his worst nightmares come true and put onto the screen. This is really...
I mean, explain to people what you mean by that, because just so the joke doesn't slip past us, I mean, take a step back, and the Catholic Church is supporting this. You showed the slide here in your post. You know, we can talk about who Pope Francis is and what jersey he's really wearing, because we don't know, you know, whose side he's really on. But you showed this guy, Timothy Dolan, and I actually have the quote that I pulled up. And here's what he says when he's asked, you know, isn't this blasphemous to use the most sacred images of our faith, of this Jesus came to save the world thing, and then turn them into some kind of show? And he says, it's because the church... and the Catholic imagination, interesting phrasing, the theme of this exhibit, are all about three things: truth, goodness, and beauty. That's why we're into such things as art, culture, music, literature, and yes, even fashion. It's a very smooth recasting, but obviously, as you point out, for a lot of people who are spiritual and do care about the spirituality that they find in the Catholic Church, they just step back and go, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, I mean, this is, to me, it also reminds me of Philip K. Dick novel, you know, The Empire Never Ended. And I think what we're seeing here is the apple cart was sort of upset for at least 100 years or so. The apple cart of the aristocracy, the clergy, banking interests, and military interests were working very well in tandem and keeping the rest of us on a very short leash quite effectively for thousands of years. And I think that technology, you know, the Industrial Revolution, the world wars, you know, nobody in World War I could really anticipate the effect that, you know, mechanized, industrialized murder would have on human consciousness and on society. And I think that was sort of a shock to the system. And then the socialist and communist revolutions were sort of a shock to the system. And, you know, I mean, it's something they tried very hard to manage, but I think that there were repercussions there. And I think what we're seeing here, I mean, this entire thing reminds me so much of ancient Rome. It looks exactly and plays exactly like something that you would see some festival in ancient Rome that, you know, you and I and all the rest of us, you know, would be standing out on the cobblestones watching these aristocrats and these celebrities and these gladiators enter into this, you know, what is essentially a high ritual. So what we are seeing here, it's very, you know, and the way that the news report makes sure that you know that you were not involved. This is, you're not part of this. This is something you can watch, but this isn't for you. You're not invited. You will never be invited. You know, the millions of the people, pretty much everyone who is watching this will never gain access to this gala. This is a convocation of the gods. So we're seeing this technology, high technology, as being, you know, the greatest gift to the powers of the empire to restore, you know, what I've been talking about since I started the blog, which is the restoration of the old hierarchies. And I think that, you know, that to me is the subtext here. But there's another subtext that's really troubling, is that one thing that I noticed before this gala took a place. Oh, and also, by the way, gala is a term that meant priests of Inanna in Babylon. So it's just like, it's the whole smorgasbord. So, or Ishtar in Babylon, Inanna in Sumer. But at, on the roof, one of the stories that I covered, I think that I included it in this as well, is that on the roof of the Metropolitan Museum, as this was taking place, and I think it's on the roof until October, is a 12-foot alien demon that people have you seen this? It's called We yeah. Come in Peace. I don't even know how to wrap my head around this. I mean, it's just like, what reality are we living in now? I can't begin to imagine what the thinking behind this is. I scroll down looking at it now.
You're quite right, right? So at one level of a cultural control mechanism, this seems like a good strategy. You know, if this was your job, if this was your 9-to-5 to say, let's control the masses, because let's consider the alternative of controlling the masses. Is they're going to storm the castle and they're going to take over everything.
Pitchforks out, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So we don't want that. So it is in our interest to control the masses. How do we do it? And then you're saying one way is this very Roman way of, you know, the Colosseum and popcorn and theater and all the rest of that. And in that sense, this meets all the, it checks all the boxes. And then you start checking those boxes and you start saying, you know, in that bracketed reality, let me, you know, fashion, art, charity, NFL. Notice that we're going to get the NFL guys both introducing it and we're going to show them on there. We're going to get the Hollywood, we're going to get the celebrity. From a cultural control mechanism, that's how you do it. But the other parts of it that you kind of slip into and out of, and quite appropriately, are some of these other really deeper parts, is that if you're another part of that control mechanism, and you're not, your 9-to-5 isn't just to control the masses, but your secret ritual, higher magic practice is to say, how can I control the God above gods? How can I control the gods? How can I bend the extended consciousness reality that is and make it work to my benefit? Well, then you're playing a different game, but you're also doing some of the same things that you would see at the Met Gala, right? So I want you to kind of pull those two apart, because we have the satanic imagery interspersed in this. I mean, it's in your face again. And that's not just playing to a cultural control tune. It's also playing to, and you mentioned the Masonic colors and stuff like that. I mean, you can deconstruct it either way you want. You can say, well, that's just signaling. It's just another way of the this pop culture. It doesn't mean anything. Or you can say, gee, we have to be aware that there is this extended consciousness reality, and they're playing in that field too. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I would take it to a much more basic level than that, and just sort of get to, you know, one of the things that I've been trying to parse is, you know, if in fact there is some effort being made at entrainment, you know, what's the end result here? And what, in fact, do these people actually believe? You know, what do they believe in? I have a very strong conviction that, you know, atheists make good scientists, they make good functionaries, they make good bureaucrats. You know, sort of like, The Brave New World, it would be the betas. You know, you sort of want your betas to just be focused on the number crunching, but the alphas, or you know, the plu ultra alphas, as it were, they have a very strong belief system. And this is something that I just got a sense of when I was in New York, working in New York, and walking around, you know, where the money is, you know, with all the neighborhoods where, you know, the people who have money live, not necessarily work. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but, you know, places like Murray Hill and the Upper East and Upper West Side, I mean, these kind of neighborhoods, and looking at the way buildings were decorated, the way lobbies were decorated. And, you know, this really sort of was the impetus behind, or the original impetus behind our Gods Were Hispanics, because on that street level in seeing this mythological, godly symbolism everywhere you looked, I came to understand that there's a belief system at work, that there is a belief, you know, it may be sort of like more of a hierophantic, to coin a term, belief system in which a lot of these God symbols are seen symbolically and incorporated into a very elaborate and complex symbolic system. But, you know, every religion sort of has, you know, its mystical component. And I think that when you look at the mystical component throughout the world's religions, I think they have more common with each other than with maybe even the people who worship in, you know, ostensibly the same faith tradition, but don't see things mystically and symbolically. But at the same point in time, I think, you know, that's sort of a rabbit hole that you can just go down and never leave. And there's been hundreds of thousands of books in academic circles written about that. And that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. But I think that, you know, having attended, say, charismatic meetings, having grown up in a conservative Christian tradition, having been exposed to punk rock, which is basically a mystery cult. You know, I see it as a neo-Mithraic mystery cult. And having, you know, worked within all these different modes, I think that, you know, belief really is most powerful and moves mountains when it's based on what is perceived as an external objective reality. In other words, you know, you can symbolize things all you want. You can see the gods as being embodiments of forces of nature, but the real power and the real change makers are produced by a belief in a force that stands outside of nature, a force that stands out, a supernatural force, a force that stands outside of the machine. And again, I think that's what we're seeing here. And I just want to get back to this 12-foot three-headed or sort of like a Cerberus-headed alien demon on the roof of the Met. You know,
then hold on a second. Up. You want me to pull it up and put it on the screen?
Yeah, please do, because I think people really need to see this. What people really need to understand is that while all this was going on, and it's interesting too, because you had Catholic imagery with a number of very prominent celebrities, female celebrities dressed as scarlet women. And one of the best examples of this is the rapper Nicki Minaj, you know, who said that she was dressed as the devil, and she was wearing this long flowing red dress with what's called the waterfall train.
And didn't you say there was another one where it was something, something to the abyss? You know, I mean, it's in your blog post, but it's like a tribute to the abyss. So it's not just that they're doing the Easter play and showing the devil. I mean, they're venerating and celebrating.
Yeah, I believe that was the Ariana Grande dress, which was of the Last Judgment. So, you know, the apocalyptic symbolism is very strong here. But so what people really need to understand is that image that you're looking at right now on screen, which is that 12-foot alien demon. And it's not like I'm saying, you know, just being using hyperbole here. I mean, that's what it actually is. I mean, that's what it's presented as. That's what the artist who created it explains it as. And look at that image. I mean, that if that isn't like something out of, you know, Hieronymus Bosch's worst nightmares, I don't know what it is. It's a, you know, it's a 12-foot demon, you know, with the three heads, you know, similar to the Janus heads or the Cerberus heads, or, you know, the Hecate, you know, triple goddess kind of feeling there.
But we got to switch back to the cultural bracketing on this one too, right? Because as soon as you say that, someone's jumping in behind you and going, "You fool, it's just art. People in the art world do all sorts of crazy stuff." And you pull them back and go, "Well, no, let's go back and look at the intent of the artist, what they said they were trying to communicate. Let's look at it from this spiritual dimension and analyze whether there's any evidence for that to be true. And then let's look at the people who have decided that this should be presented in this way and what are their beliefs. And I think that it's so difficult to switch people over because that one bracket is so strong and is so dominant. It is the Good Morning America bracket, and it's so comfortable because we've been entrained, if you will, to be comfortable with that bracket. So we just get into it like a warm bath, as Marshall McLuhan said about how we read the Sunday paper. You know, we just slide into it and go, okay, tell me everything's going to be okay. Tell me I don't have to think real deeply, rather than just looking at the next bracket and incorporating that in.
Well, if that fails, then you have people like Michael Shermer who will shame you back into line. I mean, Michael Shermer to me is like, he reminds me of, you know, basically a shepherd dog. You know, the shepherd dog circles the flock, and when a sheep gets out of, you know, line, gets out of the circle, wanders, you know, off his territory, the dog swoops in and barks it back into the herd. And that's basically what Michael Shermer's job is. James Randi.
Hey, man, that's what Good Morning, but that's what Good Morning America's job is.
I see it a little bit differently. I think that Good Morning America,
certainly what Vice's job is. The skeptics are dead. The skeptics are over. Stick a fork in it. What gets me is when you go on Vice and you're edgy, man, you're hip, you're cool, and they're doing the same number. They're sounding like the next round of Michael Shermer's and saying, yeah, but we don't really believe that. We do psychedelics, but we don't understand how they refute scientific materialism and consciousness being a product of the brain. We don't go there, man. We just stay on this hip, cool level. I have to take issue with you there. I think Good Morning America, CNN, MSNBC, they are the sheepdogs. They are barking us back into line.
Well, I see that presentation that you showed, that almost reminds me of like the New Catechism. That reminds me of like Sunday school more than, you know, it's sort of the carrot and the stick. And that seems to be more of the carrot end of, you know, that's the enticement. That is the, that's the honey rather than the vinegar. Do you see what I'm getting at here? I mean, that's making it all alluring. That's not, you know, using the threat of ostracism and humiliation if you question it. I that's the point I'm trying to make here. I mean, I think it's an important distinction because you attract more people with honey than with vinegar, but you know, you need the vinegar in certain cases. You know, you need the stick for when the incorrigibles question why there is the 12-foot alien demon on the roof of one of the most famous art museums in the world, you know, maybe the second most prominent art museum after the Louvre in Paris, which has, you know, the giant glass pyramid I was getting to a specific point, and that is that if you really start to, and this is something that I've been really detailing for the past year or so, is that if you really start to look at a lot of the symbolism, and it's becoming more and more apparent and more repetitive, and you know, this whole entrainment process, is that there really is a belief in what Christians and Jews sort of saw as the Nephilim, as the fallen angels, as you know, the sons of heaven, who were painted in books like Enoch as the villains. That they're seen as the good guys, that they were, you know, if you actually read Enoch, I mean, the watchers come to Earth and they bring technology, they bring gifts. I mean, they teach human beings how to civilize themselves, how to, technologies, how to read the stars, all these sort of things. So a lot of people over time have said, no, those are the good guys. Those weren't the bad guys. Those were the good guys. So in looking at this whole Met Gala, and again, this could just be my personal interpretation, blah, 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 disclaimer, disclaimer. But it's like we're seeing what it looks like that reconstitution of the iconography and the symbolism of the church, but all under the like the literal wing of this fallen angel up on the roof of the building in which this all took place. I mean, the symbolism could not possibly be more crystal clear. I mean, I would have to come up to you and start smashing you in the face with a hammer and screaming at you for this to be any clearer if people were actually paying attention to what was being said. And the problem is that people don't pay attention to what's being said. They pay attention to the way it's being packaged, the way it's being re-presented to them.
But maybe there's a reason for that. And, you know, that's interesting. I think that's like a layer or a level three or four kind of discussion that I love to have, but let's try and get there. Let me just say my piece. Cause I want to try and get there because this gets a little bit to the agree to disagree part, because one of the things that the points that you just made, and totally valid, you may be right, I may be completely wrong, but you're suggesting that the imagery, the symbolism, and the meaning behind it is so obvious once you pull it apart. And I juxtapose that with all the other stuff that we've talked about in terms of the reality bracketing, and I'm saying, my point would be, I don't think you're being totally fair to the reality of some of those other brackets. The reality that Good Morning America, even though they may be this culture-shaping entrainment vehicle, is also a news organization, is also a profit center. They're not in the business of going out of business. They don't have an endless supply of money. They have to have eyeballs. So they are both responding to the public and leading the public. And there's a subtlety to that. There's a reality to fashion. There's a reality to people who like to find ways to express themselves in different ways. And I think sometimes we get into this mode and we're forced to choose that, oh, everyone has these crazy esoteric kind of thing. No, only a very few do. And the other point that I guess I jump in there and make is that not everything works the way the culture shapers want. So we have so many dramatic examples of that, but no one saw that frickin' thing on the top of the Met. So if that was supposed to be some big signal that no one got, well, no one did get it. So to that extent, to where they're trying to put it in your face for an agenda that we're not really clear of, we have to say, well, that's a fail too. So I guess I've spotted off.
I don't see it as a fail because I think that the people who were meant to get the signal got the signal, because that story on that sculpture was a major news story in the New York Times, New York Post, I mean, a number of art newspapers. I mean, that information was circulated. I mean, the problem, and again, the problem that I have with a lot of conspiracy theory is that it's always like, oh, it's about me. And the thing that I've been saying since I started the blog is like, I don't think they really care what we think. I don't think they care. You know, the people who erect these giant buildings with these illuminated obelisks and pyramids and all this kind of
stuff. Of course they do. It's back to the pitchforks thing. It's back to the pitchforks. It's why they're trying to take away the guns. You know, it's like, to get into the whole Second Amendment thing, which we don't have to and shouldn't, but it's so relevant again in this bracketed reality. But one of the realities of that I think people don't get is, you know what? It's a lot harder to control people when they don't have guns. And people say, well, how can that be? I mean, they can roll in with tanks. They can roll in with, all these super weapons and all this. Yes, but it's still a lot harder than going to door to door and trying to disarm people of M16s. So I say that only because that's another reality. Chris, if I would turn it around and saying, if what you're saying is true, is real, then of course they wanted everyone to hear it. Of course they wanted everyone to see it. It's like, to switch to another topic again, it's like the UFO thing that they've tried to push out in the last 6 months, and it failed miserably. We don't know why Tom DeLonge couldn't carry that water as the water boy that he was, but he wasn't able to carry it. But we don't know why. But our best guess is they were trying to run a PSYOP and it didn't work. So the best way to process this stuff, I think, is at its surface level, they're trying to run stuff and it doesn't always work.
No, I agree with, let me just sort of turn that back on you and say, I agree with pretty much everything you've just said. And, you know, this whole thing about the BRCA realities and things existing on all these various planes. I mean, I think this goes back as long as human history is concerned. I mean, this goes back, you know, literally to Sumeria and to Babylon. You know, I agree with you. But what I'm trying to say is that when you have this gala event, and of course, again, gala is a word meaning priesthood to Ishtar, to Inanna, to Venus, I mean, whoever you want, whatever name you want to give her. But I think that there's an understanding that people who need to understand that it's a lot of information is meant for public consumption. A lot of information is meant not for public consumption. I mean, you know, you gain a lot of power and advantage in the marketplace through secrecy, through, you know, confidential information, through proprietary material. I mean, you don't make everything public. You know, the things you want to make public, you make public. And I don't want to say that, you know, this whole idea that there's some grand puppet master just orchestrating everything we see and do. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's untenable. I think that logistically, it's a non-starter. But I do think that there are a number of, what we see through corporate consolidation, that it's much easier to put through a consistent message now than ever before, because, you know, even with all the multiplicity of the internet and things like that, you do have centralization in the media that most of the people in the world consume.
Sure, but not to get off on another tangent, but I think what you just kind of brushed over there is such a huge, huge counterbalance that it has to be drawn out. And that's that we have greater access to alternative voices, to alternative realities, that it pales by comparison to the amount of consolidation. The fact that people can listen to you and me for free, the fact that people can still Google or Bing or whatever, a lot of this stuff, and spend days deconstructing this is just unprecedented. We just can't point to another time in history. We can point to other places in history where governments, social organizations have been able to kind of completely get a stranglehold on the media, but we haven't been able to point to other times when there's been this wide open access to information, unprecedented information.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things that I'm very concerned about is the way all the various techniques that are being used to limit choice, to limit availability of dissenting voices, to eliminate or to, you know, we see things like shadow banning, we see things like deplatforming, we see things like delisting. I mean, there are a lot of ways to not necessarily silence someone, but to take away their megaphone. And I think that that's something that everyone should be concerned about. Now, here's the thing. I mean, one of the things that I always try to impart to people is that people who, you know, like a supervillain, so to speak, like a Lex Luthor. I mean, these people do not see themselves as the villains. They do not see themselves as bad guys. I mean, you do have Satanists in the world. I mean, you certainly have a lot of Satanists in the entertainment industry and so on. But they to me aren't the players. The people who really move and shake you don't see yourself as the villain and the loser in someone else's story. You see yourself as the victor. You see yourself as, you know, a cut above. You see yourself as transcending these kind of limitations.
As the light bearer.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that when you see these kind of things like this Met Gala presentation, which, I mean, I could write a book on this thing. It's just, it just boggles my mind. The, you know, and all these different bracket realities at play. You know, it's like they've got all the horses running here because all the bracketed realities are being manipulated, you know, in sync, so to speak. I mean, they're all being run at the same time. And this whole entire progress is being operated concurrently. So I think that that's something, you know, it's very important. And it's like there's so many ideas that, you know, we could just have a, like an entire series of like 3 hour long talks that we wouldn't even scrape the surface of. What I'm trying
hold on, because I got to say, I have a time limit here that I have to run into something. So I do have to wrap that up, but that was just going to be my point. I want to share with people what I'm not going to be able to talk about today, but I wanted to be able to talk about because I wanted to go check out all this stuff at the Secret Sun and then maybe get back to me and get back to you and tell us if you see it this way. So, you know, here's another post I was hoping to cover. We're not going to be able to cover. I titled it, "Is Satan Panicked?" And you just have an awesome post about Johnny Depp. And I think you're spot on so many things. But what it really came down to was these three guys who got, I love this, got entangled in mass hysteria. Because anything to do with satanic ritual abuse, of course, is hysteria, because that's how we bracket that reality. There's no reality to it. So I want people to check out that. And then I want people to check out your excellent post. You mentioned entrainment many times. Is this classic entrainment in terms of telling us about how we should understand our sexuality? Oh, no, it's, let me tell you the truth about robotic sex or sex with fish, which they, you have a whole section on your blog when that movie, that recent movie came out. So what I'm really hoping people do is check out your books, check out your excellent blog, which you can see there on the screen, thesecretson.blogspot.com. But in the time we do have left, tell us, Chris, what's coming up for you? You know, since I put this thing together, you already have two more blog posts up there that, you know, I haven't even touched on. So what's coming up? What can people look for from you in the coming weeks and months?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because one of the things that I really want to touch upon is something that I know that you've discussed with Gordon, and that's this whole idea of star magic and the idea of the mystery of the stars and the mystery of the certain stars and certain constellations in this. And this is something that I really have to confess, I stumbled upon by accident by following these various streams that I've been following over the past year, but I really see as very powerful and very important. And that might sound like just completely nebulous, but what I think this really boils down to, and this might sound completely off the wall, and I understand that, which is why I'm struggling so hard, the effect of cosmic rays from supernovas on human DNA and on human consciousness. I think that this is something that we don't pay attention to, and I think is really important, and I think is really behind a lot of the symbolism. It sounds completely off the wall, but it just keeps popping up again and again.
That is so cool. It's so awesome that you would go there. I mean, I hope folks can appreciate that. And that's why I said the agree to disagree thing is like, I don't know enough about that to even agree or disagree. But I sure as hell love the fact that you are out there doing this work. And as I said at the beginning, folks, if you can find a way to support this guy, it is the best investment you can make on your money. Because if there is the beginnings of a counterbalance to some of the culture shaping that's going on and the new culture that's constantly being formed, this is part of it. So, Chris, it's just awesome. And we're going to have to just continue this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this stuff. And, if people come to the blog and don't understand what's going on, don't feel bad, because it's a very, very deep rabbit hole. All of us are still falling down it and struggling to find a foothold. So you're not alone, believe me. Don't feel bad.
Thanks again to Chris Knowles for joining me today on Skeptico. One question to tee up. What do you make about my idea of a bracketed reality view of some of these events, in particular this Met Gala event and its strong and bizarre connection to the Catholic Church? So let me know what you think about that. I'd love to hear from you. Of course, the place to do it is through the Skeptico website, SKEPTIKO, where you can find this and all the previous shows. They're available for free download for your enjoyment. And you'll also find links to other ways to reach me and connect with other listeners, like through the Skeptical Forum and things like that. So I have a number of interesting shows coming up. Do stay with me for all of that. Until next time, take care and bye for now.